From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up at Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Mary Trump's book about the president hasn't been the first tell-all book by far about Donald Trump. Insiders, journalists, former staffers have written numerous books dishing dirt about the most controversial American president in living memory. But Mary Trump's book is unique in that it tells the story of the president from the perspective of a family member who had an inside view into his psyche. And Ms. Trump has a PhD in clinical psychology. Joining us to review the book, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man, is Katha Pollitt, longtime essayist and author, contributor to The Nation magazine. She's written numerous books, including Pro, Reclaiming Abortion Rights, The Mind-Body Problem, and more. She's also an award-winning poet and has taught poetry at Princeton and Barnard and women's studies at New School University. Her new piece in The Nation is called Donald Trump's Niece Dishes the Dirt. Welcome to the program, Katha.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks so much for having me.
So I understand that you read the book, so I don't have to, as I appreciate that. How does the book come across? Because, of course, some have defenders of Trump have attempted to dismiss it as gossip from a disgruntled member of the family.
Actually, it isn't as gossipy as you might think. Most of the tidbits, the gossipy, salacious tidbits, have been widely reported. The bulk of the book is not like that. It's a fairly serious investigation of Trump family dysfunction and why they are like the way they are. So I enjoyed it thoroughly. I spent a day, you know, lying on the sofa reading the book, and that was a fun day for me.
So the book is, it seems to be a clinical psychologist's perspective on this person who ended up becoming president. It seems as though she tries to link Trump's current psyche to his childhood, in particular the way in which he was raised by Fred Sr. So what does she say about that?
She describes Fred Sr. as pretty much a psychopath or a sociopath. I'm not sure what the difference is. He was tyrannical. He was hostile. He was indifferent to his children, except when he could use them. He was a cold, awful person. I don't know how to put it any simpler than that. And he, at first, this is what a lot of her, her enemies would say is her being gossipy and vengeful, because she was the daughter of the oldest son. Fred was completely indifferent to his daughter.
So there's Fred Sr., Trump, Donald Trump's father, and then Fred Jr., Donald Trump's older brother?
Who was his older brother. And this older brother was really just not cut out for the Trump family business, which was building and renting large apartment blocks in Brooklyn and Queens. And these were not very nice buildings. They were not well kept up. Young Fred was more of a kind of happy-go-lucky guy. And he really hated the real estate business. And Fred Sr. could not forgive him that. He could not let him be his own person. And it's the thesis of Mary Trump that this lay behind young Fred's alcoholism, which killed him when he was only 42 years old. It's really sad, very sad story. And, you know, some of the things that happen in this book are hard to believe. They're like out of some awful Victorian novel. For example, when young Fred was very sick, not just with alcoholism, but he also had a serious heart condition that eventually killed him, and he had lost whatever money he had. They kept most of the money that should have been his away from him. So he moves back into the family mansion And they make him sleep on a cot in the attic. Can you believe it? Hmm. I mean, this is an enormous mansion with many bedrooms. And then, although Fred Sr. and his wife, Marianne, had given a great deal of money to various hospitals, they were big donors to hospitals, they did not get quality medical care for him at all. And they sent him off in an ambulance, basically the night he died. And it's just shocking to think that parents could be like that.
So this is Fred Jr., of course, being Mary Trump's father. She's the author of the book that we're discussing, and she is, you know, writing about Donald Trump, her uncle. What did she say Donald Trump was doing while his older brother was languishing and dying of alcoholism?
He went to the movies with his sister. Mm. There is no suggestion in this book that that Donald Trump is one bit better than his father, one bit kinder, more curious, nicer, politer, anything. He really is a chip off the old block. And the interesting thing is after young Fred turned out not to be the inheritor of the family mantle, Fred Sr. picked on Donald. And Donald was like a flashier version of Fred Sr. because Fred Sr., I didn't know this, but he was not a native English speaker. He had been raised in a German household, and he always spoke with an accent, and he was very old-fashioned in his ways. And as time went on, that style of being an important business person in New York changed. But Donald had this new way, which was to be brash, self-confident, be in the papers all the time, tout your virility, go out with lots of women. And although Fred was extremely puritanical, he loved this. He loved this. And so he pushed Donald to be the face of the business. And also, another thing is that Fred wanted to be in Manhattan real estate. And he couldn't really do that. But Donald could. And so he promoted Donald to be sort of the modern, ever more successful Trump business face.
So Mary Trump also describes the way in which her mother was treated after her father died. And her father died very young. This is Trump's younger brother, really abandoned by his family. So her mother was also, I understand, not treated well. And it's sort of a wonder that Mary Trump herself managed to sort of escape this family.
Yes, it is. It is quite amazing. Well, Linda Trump, the wife of Fred Jr. and mother of Mary, she got a divorce. And she was completely stiffed in the divorce. Partly because Fred actually was very rich. He owned a lot of the Trump property, but he didn't know that. And they were able to not tell him. So anyway, Linda ended up being stuck living in one of these crummy apartments that, you know, was very cold and they wouldn't fix the windows and all like that. And she was unable to get out from under the thumb of the Trump family because she didn't really have enough money to establish herself on her own. So anyway, she and Mary and Mary's brother always went to the two big Trump family gatherings, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they did this for years and years. And Mary herself says, I don't know why my mother did this because they were so mean to her. And in fact, it culminated in Blaine Trump, who was the socialite wife of Robert Trump, the youngest brother. Blaine and Ivana went to Marianne Trump, the matriarch, the wife of Fred Sr., and said, you know, it's Linda or us. We're not going to come to these events anymore unless you stop inviting her. And so they did stop inviting her. And, you know, when you think, every Thanksgiving, there's all this stuff on the internet about what do you do about your terrible relatives? Yeah. Well, the the Trump family just decided they would get rid of her. And there's no suggestion that she was a particularly terrible person. Mm. There was a funny story that, in fact, my favorite story is that Donald Trump and Ivana, that was his first wife, who were immensely rich. I mean, they weren't as rich as they claimed to be, but they were very rich. And they would re-gift Christmas presents. They would give people re-gifted things that they had received. And so one year they gave Mary Trump's mother, Linda, a very nice designer handbag. And when she opened it up, there was a used Kleenex in it. Another time they gave them, the family, a food basket from which a tin was missing. You could see from the indentation. And somebody said, oh, it's probably the caviar. They wouldn't give you that. So they just are, I mean, it's an amusing book because for some reason it's fun to read about awful people.
Well, and it also seems to be what you're describing seems to be very consistent with what the stories we had heard before Trump was elected president about how he cheated workers out of and contractors out of pay, that he's basically somebody who doesn't believe that other people, people who do things for him are worth valuing.
Well, exactly. The way he is in his family is kind of the way he is with our country. Yeah. And with his businesses, that he is just a completely irresponsible and uncaring, dishonest person. And it's very disturbing to think that people elected him, even if 3 million more people voted for Hillary.
And it's also interesting that the Republican Party, which, you know, used to pride itself, maybe they don't seem to do it as much anymore vocally, but they used to pride themselves on being the family values party, has chosen a person like this who's clearly has, you know, the worst sort of family values by any definition, by a Republican, by a conservative or liberal definition of family values.
Completely. But that, you know, they didn't like him at first, the Republican Party. Remember, there were all those other people running and everybody said, oh, he's never going to get anywhere. But he did. He knocked them off one by one, as he said. And at that point, the Republican Party coalesced around him. I mean, look at evangelical Christians. It's shocking. It's shocking. This is a man who violates every principle they have. Whether it's believing in God, being a good Christian, all that, you know, caring about other people, caring about the poor. All he is, he decided to be anti-abortion when he was told, when he began his run, he was told, well, you'll never get anywhere if you're pro-choice, which he then was, to the extent that he had any views at all. And he said, oh, I'm not pro-choice, I'm pro-life. Right. Just like that.
Right.
He turned up the dime. So that's what they get out of him. They get all these judges, these terrible judges, and they get evangelicals salted through many, many government agencies, including Health and Human Services, where they've done a great deal of damage to the cause of women's reproductive rights. So he's a person who's completely without principle.
He did refer or acknowledge Mary Trump's book on Twitter on Friday. Before that, it was just the White House fighting to prevent the book from being released. But this is what he said on Twitter. He said, Mary Trump, a seldom seen niece who knows little about me, says untruthful things about my wonderful parents, in brackets, who couldn't stand her, and me, and violated her NDA. She's a mess. Many books have been written about me, some good, some bad, both happily and sadly. There will be more to come. The sort of usual word salady means of expression. But, you know, you mentioned that she was basically left out, her family, her side of the family, was eventually sort of left out of the family gatherings. And he said she was seldom seen, but that was by design, right?
Well, the most interesting thing along those lines is that when Fred died, old Fred, when he died, he had cut Mary and her mother and her brother out of the will. This was in 2000, I believe. It cut him out of them completely out of the will. And then later, Mary Ann Trump, the family matriarch, she cut them out of her will too. And I don't know, that just seems like, even if you don't really like your grandchildren, it's a big step to say, you know, okay, nothing for you. You know, if only because they're the children of your beloved son who died so young, except he wasn't beloved, that's the thing. So then there was a big lawsuit that went on and on and on, and in which Mary and her brother ended up taking, it's amazing, they believed that the Trump fortune was $30 million, and actually it was a lot more than that. They just didn't know. And somehow their lawyers neglected to find this out. I don't want to go to the wall on that, but I think that's my reading of the book. And so eventually in 2017 or 18, Mary got all the paper that had been gathered in this lawsuit over the will and gave it to the New York Times. And that was one of the important sources for a Pulitzer Prize winning piece they wrote in 2018, which was about the Trump family tax skullduggery, that they did all these tax dodges and things that were very illegal or next door to illegal. So that's interesting. She did actually get revenge.
Right. She had not been very vocal until she wrote this book. I believe there was one tweet she put out after Trump was declared the winner of the 2016 election. But then we have found out before the book's release that she was that source to the New York Times. Let's talk about Trump's racism. In the interviews that Mary Trump did about her book, she spoke to Rachel Maddow on MSNBC and was asked by Maddow whether Trump, she ever heard her uncle use the N-word, use anti-Semitic slurs, and Mary Trump said unequivocally, yes, she did. I remember when Trump first came to power, a lot of people sort of tried to argue, well, it's not clear if he is really racist or is just playing to a racist base to try to get elected. Mary Trump says, no, Trump was through and through a racist, and she saw it growing up. What did you find out in the book? Did she write about that aspect of him in the book?
Well, she doesn't mention very much about that. At one point, she talks about how Trump and his siblings sitting around having their usual conversation, which was racism, discussing ugly women, you know, stuff like that.
So but lots of misogyny.
Yeah, lots of misogyny. But she doesn't really get into the racism of the family, except, of course, as we know, they refused to rent to Black people in their, you know, their buildings out in Queens and Brooklyn, and there was a lawsuit about that. And that was supposed to change the terms of the lawsuit. I'm not sure it did. But there's no question from the book that, he's a racist.
So the book is called Too Much and Never Enough. And she has sort of attempted to say that this is not a person whose character is redeemable. We've also heard in the Fox News Sunday interview with Chris Wallace that Trump, when asked if he would accept the results of the election if he lost, he just didn't want to say one way or another if he would accept the results of an election. Knowing what you now know about Trump's psyche through the Mary Trump book and also what he said himself, are you fearful about November?
Well, you know, I think Trump might protest vigorously if he loses and say it was all because of, you know, these mail-in votes and cheating and all like that.
And he's
that.
Laying the groundwork for that now.
He is definitely laying the groundwork for that. But I have enough trust still, I have enough trust in, you know, our institutions that I don't think he could get away with that. But it's very important that we rack up as many votes for the Democrats as we can, because if it's close, he would do that. And, you know, he's the Supreme Court. He's got a lot of justices on there now and the other courts, too. So it's really, really important that people vote for Biden.
And so, do you think looking back on the fact that there have been, as I mentioned, so many books written about Trump, where would you place Mary Trump's book in all of this? I mean, could it change minds? We're already seeing Trump's poll numbers falling precipitously, although, of course, there are still many months between now and November. A big part of it is because of his terrible mishandling of the coronavirus crisis. He literally doesn't have a plan. And, you know, it's not clear if Mary Trump's book necessarily is playing a role in the falling of the poll numbers. What do you think?
Well, I just want to mention among the many excellent books about Trump, there's one by Andrea Bernstein, who's a correspondent for WNYC. She has the Trump beat there, and it's called American Oligarchs. And it's a comparative, a double biography of the Trump family and the Kushner family. Mm. And it's really good. I would say that Mary's Trump's book will probably be read mostly by the converted, but maybe the converted will give it to their Trumpy friends, you know? I mean, it's sold 950,000 copies the first day of publication. That's pretty incredible. So I think that I've always been amazed from the, you know, that 4 in 10 Americans basically approve of Donald Trump. I find that every day that hits me on the head. And I think that's amazing. If you were sitting at a dining table that was representative of our country, 4 of the 10 people there would be for Trump.
And it's quite remarkable to also see that although Trump's popularity is precipitously falling, there's still something like nearly 50% of white Americans continue to support Trump.
Well, you know, it's funny because people will say, I've talked to some people I know who are for Trump, and they won't defend the kind of thing that Mary mostly talks about. They will say, oh, I really don't like the way he tweets. I really don't like the language he uses about women. I just think he could be a little more statesmanlike. You know, they'll say stuff like that. But then they will like a lot something like, as one of them said to me, I think it's just really important to know how many people here are citizens. They buy all the stuff about illegal, you know, undocumented immigrants, or as they would say, illegal immigrants. I think that they have different ideas than probably most of us on your show have. Yeah. And they're willing to put up with a lot for that. Yeah. You know, they love the police.
He promises them white supremacy, and the fear of equality with non-whites seems to be what motivates a lot of his supporters.
They would never say that. What they would say is, no, Black people, it's fine. I'm fine with Black people, but we all have to obey the laws, and that's what the police are here for. And we can't have all these people running wild and, you know, shooting people, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So they have a whole different worldview, and I don't know what will get through to them, because I think it goes very deep. And of course, they reinforce it on the internet all the time. For example, our plumber, who's, you know, a really nice, great guy, believes that Black Lives Matter is all financed by George Soros. What can you say?
There you go. Yeah. Well, I'm waiting for my paycheck. I don't know about you, Katha. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll post a link to your review in The Nation magazine about Mary Trump's book. Always love having you.
Oh, thanks so much. And thanks for having me on the show. It was fun.
My guest has been Katha Pollitt. She's a longtime essayist and author and contributor to The Nation magazine. And she's also an award-winning poet who's taught poetry at Princeton and Barnard. And she's taught women's studies at the New School University. We've been talking about her latest piece in The Nation called Donald Trump's Niece Dishes the Dirt, a review of the new book by Mary Trump. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.